The Tom Woods Show, episode 815.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I want to make sure that people who listen to my show have an opportunity to hear my sister podcast, Contra Krugman, that I do with Bob Murphy. Every week we refute Paul Krugman's New York Times column over at ContraKrugman.com. We have a whole lot of fun doing it. And one time in the distant past, I ran an episode of Contra Krugman as an episode of this show as a bonus episode. Well, today, now don't yell at me, today I'm going to run an episode of Contra Krugman as a regular episode of this show. And I'm doing that partly because I'm out of town this week. And yeah, I probably should do this as a bonus episode. But this week, as far as I'm concerned, these are all bonus episodes. Because if you've listened to the show for a long time, you know I normally take this whole week off. I take about a week and a half off at Christmas time. And this year, I'm not doing that at all. So the fact that you got the other four episodes is the real miracle. So yeah, okay, if you've already heard this episode of Contra Krugman, well, it's a pretty good one. You could listen to it a second time. But I do want people to know about it. And I think you're going to like this particular episode. This is our most recent one. For those of you who are regular listeners, we will be resuming as soon as I get back, and we'll probably do two episodes next week to make up for my absence. But all the same, this is an episode dealing with a column Krugman wrote about the destruction of the Republic and really arguing that Trump has really capped it off. And Bob and I just thought that really takes the cake, that he would say that when he has cheered every single move against Republican government, Republican with a small r, of course, in his whole lifetime and before. So we're going to talk about that in today's episode. Now, those of you who have not listened before will not get the jokes toward the end, so I'm going to explain them to you. Bob and I hosted a cruise called the Contra Cruise back in October 2016, and it was a lot of fun. And who knows if we'll do another one, but we certainly did do that when we had a ton of fun doing it. And leading up to that, Bob and I had this sort of gag, this running joke on the show that we would have these awkward segues into the show. So we would say, yeah, boy, that guy's credibility sure is sinking. And then the other one would say, you know what won't sink? The Contra Cruise? Right. Okay, so everything, you know where you won't do such and such, the answer was always the Contra Cruise. Well, it's a little bit awkward doing that when there is no Contra Cruise to pitch, and that's now become sort of the new joke. Anyway, that's what's going on in this episode. If you like Contra Krugman, check out ContraKrugman.com, where you'll find out, you'll see all the episodes, and also you'll find the links to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. All right, get ready. Here comes Contra Krugman. Contra Krugman, episode 66.
Welcome to the podcast that takes apart Paul Krugman's New York Times column. Join us as Tom Woods and Bob Murphy teach economics by uncovering and dissecting the errors of Krugman, Nobel Prize winner, newspaper columnist, and destroyer of nations. It's time for Contra Krugman.
Hey, everybody, if you don't yet have my free ebook, Five Paths to an Online Income, you are missing out. This is a how-to guide, how to podcast, how to self-publish a book, how to monetize a blog, and so much more. So it's a how-to guide, and it's also a how-to-monetize guide. It's both. Check it out at pathstoincome.com.
Hey, everybody. Friendly neighborhood economist Bob Murphy here. A lot of people have been contacting me and saying, Bob, we love Contra Krugman, but can you do another podcast where you just talk about current events in the financial sector without filtering it through whatever Paul Krugman happened to say that week? Turns out you're in luck. I do have another podcast that fits that bill. It's with my co-author, Carlos Lara. So to access this, just go to laramurphy.com. That's LARA-Murphy.com, and you'll see the tab for the podcast is along the top toolbar. Hope you'll check it out.
Hey, everybody. Tom Woods and Bob Murphy here with another episode of Contra Krugman. On the eve of Christmas, if not the very eve, then pretty darn close to Christmas. And here we are still churning out episodes. It's pretty darn unbelievable. And actually, Bob, you and I are going to have to talk. Let's try and remember after this episode. Next week's going to be hard because I'll be totally inaccessible. So how are we going to do this? I don't know, but we'll make the magic of Contra Krugman occur one way or the other. It'll magically be solved.
I think we could do it right now, Tom, right? Just
yeah.
No, come on. Trump's not that bad. And you said the opposite when Obama did it, and Hillary would have been even worse. And, oh, now all of a sudden spending is bad? Okay, that's convenient. I think we're, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. That's next week's episode. All right. So we've already got episode 67 in the can. That was a beauty. All right. Today we're actually talking about a column called How Republics End. Well, that's something Krugman would know about, wouldn't he? It's the December 19th, 2016 column.
Because he's the destroyer of nations? Is that what you mean?
He's the destroyer of nations. Bob, I'm glad you're following along with these jokes that are based on our intro music. That is good. December 19th, 2016 is the date. And of course, as always, we link to the column at contrakrugman.com/the episode number. And in this case, that's 66. All right. Let me run through it dispassionately with none of my own opinions shining through here. Krugman begins in his usual non-hysterical style. All right, I'll concede that that was an editorial point, by saying people are reacting, many people anyway, are reacting to the rise of Trumpism by reading history, specifically the history of the 1930s. What else? See, here I am doing it again. And they are right to do so. It takes willful blindness not to see the parallels between the rise of fascism and our current political nightmare. But there are other eras that have lessons to teach us, says Krugman. He says lately he's been reading a lot about the ancient world, and he's interested in how the Roman Republic fell. And he says Republican institutions don't protect against tyranny when powerful people start defying political norms. And tyranny, when it comes, can flourish even while maintaining a Republican facade. So he says, for example, Roman politics involved fierce competition among ambitious men. But that competition, for a long time, had been constrained by the rules of Roman politics. There were rules that were customary and bound by tradition that were more or less observed by everybody. But eventually, they weren't any longer. And so he makes the parallel with the U.S. He says America used to be like that, with prominent senators declaring that we must stop partisan politics at the water's edge. But now we have a president-elect who openly asked Russia to help smear his opponent. And all indications are that the bulk of his party was and is just fine with that. Well, what happens to the Republic? Well, he reminds us that in the ancient world, on paper, Rome was never transformed from a republic to an empire. On paper, it stayed a republic. It was still ruled by a Senate. It still had the same office titles. Some of the same formal procedures were observed. But although you had these outward appearances of a republic, it had really been hollowed out. Those appearances were just that, appearances. And they had been replaced by an imperial system in which an emperor really exercised the power. So then he carries on here, and I'm sorry, I mean, I guess I have to insert a bit of editorial comment, because I think the column goes completely off the rails at this point. He's supposed to be making parallels with ancient Rome. I don't think he really has any, and so he more or less gives that up and doesn't return to it ever again. Well, he returns to it very slightly at the end. He says, the sickness of American politics didn't begin with Donald Trump any more than the sickness of the Roman Republic began with Caesar. The erosion of democratic foundations, so now suddenly we're talking about democracy instead of republicanism. The erosion of democratic foundations has been underway for decades. There's no guarantee we'll ever be able to recover, but we have to, the first step is to recognize how bad things are. So, there are other things he says in the column, but he's supposed to be making a comparison, according to the mission of this column, between the ancient world and now. And it's extremely strained, because if he were to try to make that comparison, I think he'd have to go a lot farther back in American history, and he'd have to acknowledge that the Democrats were at least as much to blame as the Republicans for moving America away from republicanism. Like what concerned them was the strict observance of rules. And of course, I'm reminded of the great essay The Revolution Was by Garrett Garrett, who said, the revolution has already gone by, that we may maintain the outward appearances of a republic, but those things are long gone. He was writing in the 1930s, for heaven's sake. All right, let me kick it over to you while I try and sort through the inanities in this column, trying to think of what I can say about them.
Okay, sure. So let's continue with that thread, because you're right, Tom. I noticed that I mean, obviously, folks, a lot of Krugman's just sort of offhand remarks that if this were a play, would be written as aside. Those would be the stage directions, if you will. But the central theme here, as Tom is saying, is Krugman's trying to set it up that the Republicans, as epitomized in Donald Trump, but that has been, you know, the foundation has been laid decades previously, they are trying to transform the United States from a democratic republic into tyranny or an empire. And he's, as Tom's saying, trying to draw on ancient Rome. But here's where the classic switch happens, where Krugman acts as if what Rome had was a democracy where the people just voted and then they got majority rule. And then, oh, shoot, Caesar comes along and, you know, takes advantage of the situation and then turns himself into an emperor. And that's wrong on many levels. But let me just make sure we document how Krugman's doing that. So he says, and what happens to the Republic as a result? Famously, on paper, the transformation of Rome from Republic to Empire never happened. Officially, we may not go down exactly the same route, although are we even sure of that? But the process of destroying democratic substance while preserving forms is already underway. Okay, so in that one little paragraph, he made the switch saying Rome was a republic, and then it turned into an empire gradually, and it wasn't clear exactly when the switch happened, but it clearly did. And now we're doing the same thing by destroying democratic substance. And then to give an example of that, he says, consider what just happened in North Carolina. The voters made a clear choice, electing a Democratic governor. The Republican legislature didn't openly overturn the result, not this time anyway, but it effectively stripped the governor's office of power, ensuring that the will of the voters wouldn't actually matter. Okay, so that was his attempt to say this is an example of the kind of thing that happened when a republic turns into an empire. But notice, okay, number one, he's confusing what a republic is with a democracy. So the ancient writers, and Tom, I'll let you, when we turn the mic back over to you, maybe if you want to elaborate on this. But talking about ancient writers, let alone the founding fathers, they were not in favor of democracy. They thought that was a monster to be feared, and that's why they gave a republic. But put that aside for the second. Notice what Krugman's trying to do here. He's trying to say the Republicans are basically like Hitler in the 30s because the legislature here in North Carolina is taking power away from the executive branch. That makes no sense, right? You don't say, oh my gosh, look, they're like Hitler with the legislature taking power away from the executive. That's exactly what happens on the road to empire. No, that's the opposite of what would happen. So whether you think this thing in North Carolina is good or bad, you certainly can't say this is just another example of Republicans trying to turn us into an empire. That makes absolutely no sense. All right, I'll pause, Tom, and let you take it back.
All right, I honestly don't know where to begin with this. What happened in Rome, by the time you get to the emperor, by the time you get to Augustus, as we move into AD 14, so from about 30-ish BC to AD 14, what you have is a system where you do have an emperor, although it's not as openly acknowledged as you would think it would be. The emperor is by and large exercising a lot of powers that are traditionally held by somebody. Now, he also has some other powers he's arrogated to himself. But what's happened is, although the Senate still functions and you have other Roman offices that still function, their powers have more or less been absorbed by the emperor. Well, likewise, is that not an example of what's an illustration or a reflection of what's happened in the United States, where the president has come to exercise powers that we associate with other power centers in society? So, for example, the president more or less makes foreign policy as he wishes, with the Senate very, very much in the background. This goes way, way back. This goes back to Teddy Roosevelt, who, when he was trying to reach a deal with the Dominican Republic and the Senate wouldn't approve his deal, he said, well, then you know what? I'll just call it an executive agreement, and therefore it won't require the consent of the Senate. Now, is he allowed to do that? Can he do that? Well, the point is he did do it. And that was his attitude, that if the Senate becomes obstructionist, then power must be exercised by those who actually want to carry forward with what the people want. That is exactly what undid Rome, was exactly that attitude, that if our traditional institutions won't be activist enough, then we have to take power in our own hands, make demagogic appeals to the people over and above and against these institutions so that they will cheer the transfer of power into the hands of the single person. And that's exactly what's gone on. We've had, I mean, listen to the way U.S. presidents speak in the State of the Union speeches. They speak in a distinctly messianic tone in terms of all the promises they make about what they're going to accomplish through politics. That is not what a humble Republican executive sounds like. That you've already crossed the line into empire when you're given speeches like that. Not to mention, of course, the executive orders, the sending of troops anywhere the president wants, the all the power that the president has over executive-level agencies and regulatory bodies that are not controlled by the legislature. There are all kinds of examples of the president absorbing powers that had been exercised elsewhere. The problem for Krugman is he has cheered every single one of these moves over the years. He is the one, he is far more responsible than, for heaven's sake, Donald Trump of all people, for leading us down the road to empire. Krugman does not care about constitutional restraints. He does not care about traditional American republicanism, which is all about local self-government. He wants top-down, centralized solutions to everything, which is, in the American context, the very definition of imperial. So Krugman ought to be looking himself in the mirror when it comes to this, or defining his terms better. I don't know what. So it seems to me that both the Democrats and the Republicans are guilty of this. I mean, the fact that they both make promises that we're going to somehow give the great mass of you a lot of stuff. And who cares about the old fogies who say there are legal restraints on what we can do for you? We need a Supreme Court who will grow with America. We need, which is Hillary Clinton's way of saying, I'm going to sweep away all resistance to what I'm doing. And you're going to tell me Donald Trump is the one who sounds like Caesar?
Yeah, let me follow up on that, Tom. I've just been lighting up on Twitter lately, folks. I'm Bob Murphy Econ. I really don't know what you're doing if you're not following me.
But by the way, I honestly don't either. Why are you not following Bob on Twitter? Bob Murphy Econ is his Twitter handle. All right, go ahead.
Unless you just are against Twitter, in which case my hat's off to you and I wish I had your discipline. But if you're on Twitter and not following me, then I'm saying that's just silly. That makes no sense. So on December 16th, Krugman was on a rant, and one of them I just thought was just ironic. He said, even if Trump can't be stopped, so he meant like keeping him out through the Electoral College, because, oh my gosh, people apparently don't care that Putin just picked our next president. What a bunch of morons. So this is Krugman now. Even if Trump can't be stopped, we need any constraints on his actions we can find. And threat of public outrage is really all there is. Now, I suppose we could be fair and say, oh, Krugman just is acknowledging the fact that the U.S. Constitution has been killed. Perhaps he read the book co-authored by Tom Woods on that subject. But I don't think that's what it is. I think it is that Krugman doesn't even think of the U.S. Constitution as being a constraint on the president, because Krugman thinks that's silly. That's an outdated, old-fashioned, old-fogey thing that keeps the government from helping poor people and minorities. So it's just, again, it's funny how these leftists who despise Trump did everything they could in their careers to enhance the power of the executive branch to make health care, national security, your income, your retirement, everything flow from Washington, D.C. And now some guy that they think is a monster is taking power. And all of a sudden, you know, too bad we don't have some kind of checks on this guy's power. If only somebody had thought of that before.
And you're right. People like Krugman spend their time talking about how stupid and backward and ridiculous and out of date thinking about the Constitution is in any reasonable sense. I mean, in the sense in which it was originally intended. They admit, they're basically admitting, by the way, that the people who believe in strict construction or the original understanding of the Constitution, they're admitting those people are right. They're admitting it because they're saying, yeah, look, we obviously can't go back to that old way. That was meant for another time. OK, so you're admitting that you're now changing the meaning. OK, thank you, because that was what we wanted you to admit. So it's Krugman who's gone around saying, boy, that's stupid and old fashioned, and we need an energetic government that gets the things done that the people need. Well, that is exactly what happened in Rome. That was the whole point, was the argument that the Senate is out of touch and other institutions are out of touch and we need to strengthen this and weaken that in order to, of course, help the people. But we know what that really means. It means to help the demagogues who claim to act in the name of the people. That was exactly their argument. was that these old fogey institutions that we have, now they didn't necessarily put it this way because they had to be a little bit more subtle to get away with what they were doing, but actions speak louder than words, and their actions were saying the old way of doing things doesn't get anything done, and so therefore to heck with it. Only an idiot who has a meaningless nostalgia would want to stick to these old forms when we know that really it's power. It's the exercise of power by ambitious men that makes the world go round. That is the Krugman message. That's it.
Yeah, let me read here. So in my book on the Great Depression, I found this passage from Paul Johnson. So he's talking about the New Deal. And so this is Paul Johnson. Jesse Jones, so this was a person in the Roosevelt administration. Jesse Jones called himself and encouraged others to do so Uncle Jesse. In turn, it was said of him that he was the first financial pirate to realize that the new field of opportunity lay in public service. Hence his unofficial title, the Economic Emperor of America. Jones eventually possessed himself of Hoover's old job as Secretary of Commerce and piled up other titles, heading the Federal Loan Administration, the RFC Mortgage Company, the Disaster Loan Corporation, the Federal National Mortgage Corporation, the Export-Import Bank, the Federal Housing Administration, the Census Bureau, the Bureau of Standards, the Civil Aeronautics Board, the Patent Office, the Coast and Geodetic Survey, plus another four important posts he added during World War II. Never before had one man possessed so much public power in a democratic society. Right, so I don't recall. But you know what? While I'm talking about the New Deal, remember, when FDR came in, one of the first things he did was to issue the executive order that confiscated everybody's gold. And that was under penalty of up to a $10,000 fine and 5 to 10 years in prison. All right. So when people like Larry Summers are looking at the carrier deal, it's like, oh, my gosh, the rule of law. I can't believe that Trump is, you know, hurting our great institutions. I don't remember Krugman or Larry Summers complaining about Roosevelt ending the gold standard like that, I think, or the New Deal more generally, like the thing I just read about Paul Johnson's description of what one guy's power under that. I kind of remember, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, that Krugman is in favor of things like the New Deal, and anyone who would have said at the time, but wait a minute, I don't think you have the constitutional authority to do that, Mr. Roosevelt. I think Krugman would have laughed at that guy and said, oh, it's really just, come on, you just like minorities who are starving to death. That's really what's going on here, isn't it?
I don't really know how to add to that, because that really is the point here, that it really takes unbelievable gall for Krugman, of all people, to suddenly be worried about preserving Republican forms and not just the outward appearances. I mean, in other words, preserving the substance of Republican institutions and not just the outward appearance. Well, yeah, I mean, we still have the outward appearance. We have these fancy buildings whose architecture is derived from Republican Rome and a little bit from ancient Greece. And we have the outward appearance of constitutional government. Every 4 years, we have a presidential election. But when you just peel back one layer of the onion, there's nothing there. There's no there anymore. Krugman's been cheering this the whole time. At least he could have the... And I find almost nobody has this kind of principle. He could have had enough principle to say, you know what, I really do favor a more energetic government, but I realize that's not the government we have. So either we have to make a real educational appeal to the public to amend the Constitution accordingly, or I don't know what, but we'll have to do something. No, his view was, yeah, I know we're not allowed to do it, but we'll just arbitrarily declare that that old understanding is dead and gone, and that today we have a new way of thinking, and we'll just do what we want.
Well,
and
sorry,
you know, but basically, it boils down to, but then if it comes to be bad things that I, Paul Krugman, don't like, then I'll be all upset about the death of republicanism. But the idea, basically, I don't see what we're supposed to go on. The Constitution is not a guide for Krugman. So what are we supposed to go on to decide what the proper limits of government are? What makes Paul Krugman uncomfortable? Can you believe that there are some people who would want more precise boundaries than that?
It's funny. I don't even think it's quite that, though, Tom. Bad things are fine as long as it's under a Democratic presidency. Then it's just, oh, quit your belly aching. You know, and Krugman does what he can to minimize it. Like I say, oh, yeah, taxes on a few people went up is how he describes, you know, the hundreds of thousands of people. It may even be in the millions. I forget the numbers at this point, off the top of my head, of who, you know, whose taxes went up when the Affordable Care Act went through. You know, so he just, oh, he could literally refer to that as of taxes on a few people went up. So it's really more just if it's someone he likes who's behind it, then all of a sudden Krugman makes these things not be bad. So
yeah, yeah, it really is. You know, whereas I think, Bob, you and I would be quite willing to hold Ron Paul to a really high standard. If Ron Paul were president and he suddenly said, you know, on second thought, let's push forward with the Patriot Act. I don't think people would say, well, you know what? This whole thing has been all about the greatness of Ron Paul. And if Ron tells us this is what we need, then doggone it must be. There's no way. Our people aren't like that. So yes, yes, in case you're thinking that I'm not coming out and saying what I actually feel, I will come out and say it. We're better than Paul Krugman. Yes, yes, that is what I'm saying.
I shy away from such a bold proclamation.
Ha!
Okay, here, I know what's happening all the time. Some people listening to this are saying, you know, guys, you're being ridiculous. You have to go all the way back to FDR. I mean, that's just ancient history. I suppose Krugman himself brought up the ancient history, but still, that's kind of ridiculous. It's not like, you know, Obama did something that could arguably be construed as moving us towards a police state or an empire with no checks on the executive. Okay, so let's take that one head on. I've been going nuts since this happened. Back in May of 2012, the New York Times ran a story, front page, that in the very headline said that President Obama has a secret kill list. That's not me paraphrasing what it really means. That was the phrase in the headline of the New York Times, that the president has a secret kill list. And then it explained, and when you start reading the article, that here, this is from the New York Times. Could, talking about President Obama, could he order the targeted killing of an American citizen in a country with which the United States was not at war, in secret and without the benefit of a trial? And then it goes on to explain why. Well, yes, he can. The Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel prepared a lengthy memo justifying that extraordinary step. Again, ordering the target. So this isn't like they dropped a bomb and oops, killed a guy that they were trying to take into custody. No, this is they on purpose, deliberately saying, we're taking this guy out. He's a U.S. citizen in another country with which we are not, or at a state of war. And it's a secret and there's no judicial oversight. And say, well, gee, doesn't the Constitution protect that sort of thing? Doesn't he, you know, have due process? Oh, sure he does. But this is how they satisfy that. The Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel prepared a lengthy memo justifying that extraordinary step, asserting that while the Fifth Amendment's guarantee of due process applied, it could be satisfied by internal deliberation in the executive branch. So I think we all breathe a sigh of relief knowing that before President Obama signs off on them secretly killing you on purpose, that he and a bunch of guys talk about it first and decide, yeah, yeah, that guy does deserve to die. So there you go. Constitution in effect, republic, not anything sliding towards empire there by any stretch, nothing Caesar would think of doing. They had to have a conversation first before they kill you in secret.
That makes me feel a little bit better, though, doesn't it? Doesn't it make you feel a little bit better? There's some safeguard involved?
I would think so. And that's, by the way, I try to be really funny because I'm thinking they're going to be sitting around going, these libertarians, they're funny guys. Just kill one of them or two of them, you know, and that way maybe they'll spare me. But
what I mean, I've said my piece and I'm looking at the audio. And so far, I think I've said more than I should have said. So if you want to take us out.
Well, I think when you said we're better people, that was the point at which you had said too much.
Yeah.
We just like to leave that as an implication of the show.
Yeah.
Why don't we, while I've got you here, Tom, and while, you know, you're an expert on U.S. History and political systems and so on.
Are you leading into a discussion of the cruise?
I actually wasn't.
Oh, I'm completely out of it.
No, see, I actually take our job seriously, Tom.
Yeah, I actually knew you weren't going there.
You're like some guy. You're like this cubicle worker. You're just looking at the clock. Oh my gosh, when's it Friday? I can't wait. Okay. Can you just briefly, there's this now, this groundswell. All of a sudden, a bunch of people are saying, you know, this Electoral College is kind of stupid. Why don't we just have a popular vote and do it that way? Right. And of course, nobody worried about the Electoral College when they thought Hillary Clinton had it all locked up. The rules were fine at that point. But now that she lost, according to that metric, all of a sudden that's a stupid system. Do you want to say a few words? Can you just like what is the point of that? Why did the people framing the Constitution, you know, do it that way? And what would someone say in an online argument if somebody comes in and says, oh, you're thwarting democracy by doing that? And, you know, duh, if we live in a democratic society, clearly we should have majority rule.
Yeah, and I would say, hooray, I'm glad we're thwarting democracy. So I guess I'm not exactly the best spokesman for this, but...
But you're right. I mean, that's part of what we're saying here is Krugman is conflating a republic with democracy.
Yeah,
and I said in the
totally
beginning of the show,
is.
Yeah, people, classical writers, feared democracy. They thought that was awful. They thought democracy was the road to tyranny.
Right, exactly. All right, so yeah, let's talk about that. I did an episode on the Electoral College with two fellow historians at TomWoods.com on the Tom Woods Show, I don't know, a few weeks ago probably. So somewhere in my episode list, TomWoods.com/episodes, you'll find it. But the way I explain it, it might be a little bit different from how it would have been explained in the past, but I think this is the best explanation for the times that we're living in now. So it goes to show how flexible I am, Bob. I'm willing to speak in terms of our day and our times. So let's think about what it would look like if there were no Electoral College. Now, the funny thing is, I just read in an article on Yahoo the other day that was critical of the Electoral College that the Electoral College, according to this article, is a perverse system that encourages politicians to focus most of their campaign efforts on just a few states. That's exactly the opposite of the truth. If we didn't have the Electoral College, they would focus even more attention on just a few states, where all the population is concentrated. Now, it's true that there isn't that much effort put into campaigning in a place like Idaho, partly because the Republicans already have it sewn up, partly because it's very sparsely populated and yet geographically very large, so it just doesn't make sense to deploy the resources there. But that would be true with or without an Electoral College. But when you're dealing with a lot of these medium-sized population states, there would be a significant difference. They would see far fewer resources put into campaigning there. Why? Because I could get all the votes I need in New York, Florida, and California. That would be it. I mean, seriously, I could win the whole election focusing on those three population centers. And don't even think of them as states. Think of them as population centers. But with the Electoral College, there are only so many electoral votes you can get in any one state. And once you've gotten that, once you've won the state, once you've won enough popular votes to win the state, that's all you can ever get from that state. So that's the system's way of saying, all right, already, we get that you're popular in California. Now you got to go do something else. You can't just get all your votes from California. So in a popular vote, pure popular vote system, there would be no ceiling on how many individual votes you could get in California to run up the result. But with the Electoral College, there is a ceiling of electoral votes, which says, now go campaign somewhere else. So the Yahoo article had it exactly backward. So what we need to also bear in mind is that the United States was organized as a collection of societies. That's why in the Constitution, the United States is referred to in the plural, not in the singular. The United States are. And the Electoral College is based on this idea that what we have is not an undifferentiated mass of individuals. That would make us just like every other country in the world. What we have instead is a collection of societies. And each of these societies has its own quirks, its own peculiar characteristics, its own visions of excellence, its own ideals that it wants to uphold. And the idea is that we want to see how many of those societies these candidates can win. Now, granted, it's not purely a let's see how many states you win, because we do weight it to some degree in favor of population, but not entirely. If we did that entirely, it would be a pure popular vote. So there's an emphasis on how many societies are willing to say, yes, you would be a leader who would not undermine what we're trying to do in our little society here. That's what we're all about, local self-government. So which leader is going to do the least damage to local self-government in our little place? That's ultimately where we're going here. And the analogy I've given is to say that what we should want is just a pure popular vote. Well, first of all, that just it's totally at odds with what the United States is supposed to be. I know it's not at odds with what you learned in fourth grade, but that's because your fourth grade class sucked. All right. They were teaching you BS. The America is supposed to be a collection of societies. But it would be like saying, and I've given this example before, suppose the World Series is going on and it's the Mets versus the Red Sox to pick two teams at random. And let's say the Mets win the first three games 2-1. Every single game they win 2-1 against the Red Sox. 2-1. Then the Red Sox win the next three games 8-0. And then the Mets win the final game 3-1. The Mets win the World Series. And nobody would think it made any sense for the Red Sox to come back and say, now, wait a minute, though, if you add up the total number of runs across the whole series, we had more runs. People would just say, you're just a sore loser. That has nothing to do with it. It's how many games did you win? And then Kevin Gutzman elaborated on this, and he said that my analogy was better than I realized, because if we did run the World Series that way, where what matters is the number of runs you score over the course of the series, we would run our games differently. For instance, if the Red Sox are losing 11 to nothing in the eighth inning, they're not going to put, you know, their best relief pitcher in at the end, because they figure that game is already lost. They want to save that guy's arm for the next game. But if what matters is not the number of games but the number of runs, they don't want any more runs, right? I mean, if they lost one game, big deal. But if that 11 runs could turn into 15 runs, and these runs are going to be used against them over the whole series, then maybe they would put their top guy in just to try to stop the hemorrhaging. Or, again, you could think of any type of sporting event where at the end of the game, they put their third string in, like the Boston Celtics when I was growing up in the 1980s. You knew the Celtics had the game sewn up when Greg Kite came off the bench. Greg Kite would be throwing free throws and they'd be bricks. Free throws would be bricks. You knew they had it wrapped up. But if what mattered was over the course of the championship series, the grand total number of points, they wouldn't put Greg Kite in. They would just try to exhaust their other players the best they could. So the idea that Trump, for example, didn't win the popular vote and that's what matters, if that had been his goal, which it wasn't, his goal was to win according to the rules, the Electoral College, if that had been his goal, he would have campaigned all differently. He might have campaigned in California because at least he could get some votes there and they would count to some degree. He would have done things all differently. And so, therefore, you can't be sure what the outcome would have been. All right, I think that's it.
Can you make an analogy to football? Because I think the viewers didn't quite follow that.
I think I'm done.
All right. I suppose in summary, I just want to mention that, you know, Krugman, his second last paragraph here, I'm okay with. He says, one thing all of this makes clear is that the sickness of American politics didn't begin with Donald Trump any more than the sickness of the Roman Republic began with Caesar. The erosion of democratic foundations has been underway for decades, and there's no guarantee that we will ever be able to recover. So I'm okay with that insofar as it goes, and as if what we take by democratic foundations means the way the U.S. government originally was supposed to operate, which we've seen this not necessarily the same thing. But Krugman spent the whole column saying, and we're not putting words in his mouth, he literally said, this is all due to Republicans, that, you know, the Democrats have nothing to do with this whatsoever, even though, as I said, you could clearly point to many examples where it was Democrats in office, both in terms of civil liberties and economic liberties and foreign policy, who were acting as a tyrant would and not as somebody who thinks he's constrained by the chains of the Constitution.
Well, Bob, I think with that, we are done for today. But I hope people who have been listening, who listened to the last couple of episodes, listened all the way through to after the music, because we inserted some fun, unexpected outtake material that I think you might enjoy. But today's episode went so well, and I didn't get called by any Indian scammers while we were talking, that I don't think we have any special treats for them. You know where they will have a special treat is on the Contra Cruise that we're not sponsoring right now?
Yes, that is the case.
You want to throw me a raft here?
How about a bone? Tear? You had made hello? Nothing? No?
All right, listen, folks should still check out ContraCruise.com. Watch our little video about how much fun we had on the cruise, because if in the 1 in 800 million chance we ever decide to do another cruise, you'll be the first to know about it. So check it out at ContraCruise.com. I mean, right? Would you say those are about the odds, Bob?
And also, you know, since Donald Trump, you know, is Hitler, as Krugman has been telling us, you probably want to go abroad and just see what your options are, because people are going to need to escape in the next few years. So there's that element, too.
Exactly. Bob and I are here to help. As always, we're here to help. Let's see. What can we put on the show notes page, Bob? Anything good for people? The Krugman column, yes. Is there anything we talk? How about I'll put my Electoral College thing?
Yeah, the New York Times column about Obama's secret kill list. I still, when I was a little kid, if you told me that a major newspaper was going to say the president has a secret kill list, I would have said, oh, and so the people were rioting in the streets, right? No, that's not what happened.
I think I'll also link to the Revolution Was, that essay slash book that I mentioned, because to read something like that and realize it was written, I think, in the later 1930s, and it was written so incisively against the New Deal, it warms your heart to know that at least some people hadn't completely lost their minds. It's very good. You'll learn a lot reading Garrett's essay. So we'll link to that. Pretty sure that's up for free online somewhere, so I'll try and link to it at ContraKrugman.com/66, which we earnestly hope you will visit. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Contra Krugman. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes or Stitcher at ContraKrugman.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, our blog, books by Tom and Bob, and more at ContraKrugman.com. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.